Those who can do, those who cannot do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com.
From theblogulator.com.
This is Blogulator Radio, skewering and fawning over all things television for the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. My name's Chris.
And I'm Jerksica.
And our opinions
are super valid.
Super valid. Super valid. it's been a while. It's our first
it's been 20, a really long time.
2013 yeah. podcast from Jerksy and I. Thanks to
Father
Jerksy.
No.
How about Jerksy?
Yes, that works.
Okay. Qualler and Bridget, thank you for getting our butts in high gear and starting off the first 2013 podcast.
None of those low gear butts.
No, that's a butt that you do not want. And they did kind of a catch-up 2013 episode of the cast, and we're going to do something similar, but one thing that we noticed while we were listening through their podcast, i.e. reading its description, was that they tend to skew more towards the cable end of things.
Elitists.
They covered Enlightened, Girls, House of Cards, which I don't know, Netflix doesn't really count as cable, but, you know, it's something
it's
you pay
network.
For. No, it's not network. The only show that they did mention was the season finale of Parenthood, and while that is true, that's not a cable show. It's an anomaly amongst many of the others that they discussed, whereas Jerksk and I have found that, at least here at the beginning of 2013, we have basically just watched network programming.
Yeah.
And one reason for that might be because we downgraded our cable package, but we still have access to a lot of these shows.
Yeah, we do.
And yet we...
They're just not bringing it.
Well, I would like to watch Enlightened and Girls, but you're never in the mood for it.
Do we need to talk about how infrequently I'm in the mood here? Is this really the time and place?
2013, the year of impotence. And I actually really liked the House of Cards pilot.
I would watch House of Cards.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a commitment. That's an hour program.
I know,
like, not even 45 minutes.
We don't have time
minutes.
For
that's
an
like
hour anymore.
58
I know,
minutes.
We don't have time for an hour anymore.
I know. So it's a lot easier to just get into the...
Remember when Garfield and Friends used to do, like, quickies?
I don't think Garfield ever did a quickie.
That's what they called it. It was really unfortunate.
Why? They did not call it quickies.
Yeah, they did.
What do you mean?
They do the, like, tiny, the, like, snippet cartoons in between the longer... Garfield or U.S. Acre.
They called it a Garfield quickie.
They really did.
That's unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate, but I'm just saying, that's the kind of television...
You're not referring to U.S. Acres.
What? No, it was Garfield, but it was in, like... Okay, we're gonna Google this later.
Maybe. If we have time. 21 minutes is just such a nice...
Digestible.
Yeah. Ugh, especially with the baby and the sleeping and the...
Not sleeping.
So we're going to just run through what we've been catching up on 2013. It's basically six shows.
And all comedies. Maybe they need to make, like, 20-minute dramas.
Yeah. Actually, our Hollywood correspondent, The Drax, who used to be our Hollywood correspondent on theblogulator.com until he became too fancy and actually got jobs in Hollywood.
Oh, you fancy, huh?
But he was just talking to me about how Enlightened... which we still need to catch up on, and I'm going to make you watch it, whether you like it or not, when we run out of other stuff to watch, that, like, hour-long dramas could learn a lot from Enlightened, which is a half-hour, technically, comedy, but I think, especially based on what we saw with the first season, skews more drama.
I just have trouble with her face.
Laura Dern?
I've never been able to handle Laura Dern's face.
You and actors' faces.
I know.
It's just, like, get
like
over it.
But it's like it's melting.
Get over it. So what? So what? Who cares? She's melting.
Okay. Let's move on from the Joy Behar portion of the program.
In sum, I agree. I'd appreciate it if there were more dramas that were bite-sized like that. Because I feel like there's...
Quickies.
No, you don't have to call it that. Just call it a program. Because really, House of Cards, you could have had 13... They could have just made it 26 episodes. Well, I guess, you know, pacing and climaxes and what have you. But I'm saying...
So far we've talked about impotence, quickies, climax.
Oh, God. You know what we've been doing? Wait, what?
Watching television.
Yeah. pretty much. Anyways, there's six shows we've been watching regularly, and there's one of the six shows that we're not even caught up on all the way. So basically five shows, and of those five shows, only one of them has aired two episodes thus far this year. Anyways.
This is like a very obtuse way of like introducing the shows.
I wish I had charts and graphs,
yeah,
too.
No, you don't. No, I'm...
Anyways, I think the first and most important one to discuss here is one that is no longer with us.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. 30 Rock. It was quite the ride there. 7 years. 7 years. And we watched the finale with our 10-month-old son. And it kind of threw me for a loop as we were watching Jenna sing about the rural juror. And I was thinking, like, when we originally saw the first season rural juror episode, like, you and I weren't even married, much less a kid. And you know? I'm not even sure you were in love with me then. Were you?
Eh.
Were you?
This is better off air.
Okay. God, everything's horrible.
Oh. It's all right.
I'm glad we got 7 years of that show.
I know. I get a little teary-eyed during the finale, I'm not gonna lie. There was a lot to learn from 30 Rock. Not the least of which is you can have a couple of really great seasons, and then you can kind of plateau a little bit. And yeah. You can still come back from that.
That's amazing.
Like, without just, like, fading out or jumping the shark.
And not even, like, coming back as in having, like, sporadically good episodes. But,
no.
Like, the last two seasons were just, like, straight up good. And I'd say the last season was great.
I want to ask you about that because, you know, I just enjoy watching programming. But you're, like, a super nerd and you know all the behind-the-scenes
stuff.
Hey,
we're both in this together.
I am a part of this now, I understand. But, like... Was there a shakeup in production
behind
staff?
The scenes stuff?
Yeah, or something?
Not that I'm aware of, anyways. I know that, I mean, the writing staff had changed pretty frequently on that show in general. But I'd be curious to see, like, when the big shifts occurred. And if it was for the kind of lackluster fourth and fifth seasons.
Mm-hmm. But the last season, particularly, was pretty incredible.
Oh, God.
It took, like... self-aware to kind of a whole new level.
We were talking about this, I think, both on the Best Of podcast and on previous episodes where we got really excited about 30 Rock for the first time in a while, is that they weren't afraid to go off the deep end. And, you know, if any sitcom would not be afraid to do that in its final season, it'd be 30 Rock. So it makes complete sense, but at the same time, it was a rush. It was like having an old friend back, but in a way that was even goofier than you could previously have imagined.
Yeah, it was awesome.
But I think the best thing about the show was what we saw in the finale, which is that it can go to those extremes, but it can still have a heart. I mean, a lot of more serious TV writers have talked about the fact that 30 Rock does best when it concentrates on the relationship between Jack and Liz. And for a show that seems so joke-oriented, just based on, like, having good punchlines and having characters do crazy stuff and having really clever, you know, meta inside jokes. Like, it also was a show that underneath, and actually wore its heart on its sleeve more often than maybe I think people realized, what those Jack and Liz scenes in particular, especially the last scene in the finale where he's driving away in the boat and he says the line about the see-through dishwasher.
Yes.
It was, like, even, like, in a hilarious, like, not connected to the characters or the backstory of the show at all. That's just like a hilarious joke. But at the same time, it's very indicative and shows this wonderful relationship that the two have built over the years. And they even played on the fact that on any other show, and I literally believe this, on any other show, even I'd say some of my favorite shows, they would have eventually gone into the well of Jack and Liz hooking up. Maybe not hooking up, but at least, like, accidentally kissing or something like that. But they never went there. And I think that was really awesome that they spanned through seven seasons. Yes, two of them mediocre, but they spanned through seven seasons without ever going there.
I think you're giving them too much credit on that. Because I don't know that they ever set it up ever as, like, a... Like, I don't even think there was the potential there.
No.
Like a, will they, won't they, like...
Exactly, which is why I think that's admirable, because I feel like... And maybe even the shows that I've liked before where they've gone into that, well, it's been basically just studio pressure or just fan pressure or both. But it just seems like... And it's stupid. It's completely stupid that that's the norm, but for whatever reason, it's been very impossible over the years, especially in a traditional sitcom formula, and by no means is 30 Rock traditional, but it still is, in essence, a sitcom, where jokes are set up and fall down, and characters are rise up and then fall down. It seems like it's been the norm over the course of TV history that if you have two characters with opposite sex in the same room, regardless of age difference, that eventually they're going to hook up.
Hmm.
Whether it be anywhere between an accidental kiss and a long-term romance. And, I mean, to maybe segue a little bit into the next show we're going to talk about.
I mean, they've had to, like, pretend to be
exactly, and that's where it's been hilarious.
To, like, fill certain hijinks.
Right, and they play on that.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. You know, I will say that in any other era of television, I would be incredibly sad to see 30 Rock go, if for no other reason than you're losing a really strong, like, female protagonist.
Yes.
But I feel like now, I mean, I am still sad to see it go for that reason, and I don't think there will ever, like, I'd ever say, like, oh, now there's enough, like, female-centered shows on television, but,
and yet you
shouldn't even say, like, female-centered shows, just, like, shows that are centered around a female protagonist.
Especially comedies, I think.
Yeah, but I feel like now is a really good era for that, so I'm happy to see.
And yet you won't watch Girls or Enlightened with Me.
Well, no, they're not funny. So there's that.
Yeah, I think you mean specifically traditional sitcoms.
Traditional
too,
sitcoms,
right?
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And I think 30 Rock can take a lot of credit for that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And Tina Fey, particularly, ushering in a new era of that.
I don't think Parks and Rec probably would be on the air if it wasn't for 30 Rock.
No.
I mean, a lot of people talk about Parks and Rec being a descendant of The Office because the guys from The Office moved on to that from The Office, but I feel like maybe they felt like they could do that and they felt like they could do something, at least in its first season, similar to The Office, and then still stray from that by giving it a female protagonist. And that was a big, you know, part of its growth was taking Amy Poehler's character, Leslie Knope, and turning her into something that was more than just a female Michael Scott.
Yeah, like a caricature.
And they, like, finally realized, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler are tight, and maybe I'm fantasizing my head a little bit, but I'd like to imagine that either directly or indirectly, them realizing what they did with Liz Lemon could make them make Leslie Knope her own character that could be zany and goofy, but still believable, still identifiable, and that was something that I think, I mean, if you're talking about, like, putting this in first waves, second waves, I would say that Liz Lemon's first wave and Leslie Knope's second wave, and now we've got a whole bunch of new shows, specifically this year, or the past 2 years, maybe.
I don't think it's fair to say that, like, Tina Fey, like, was first wave. I mean, I think we're discounting a whole slew of...
From before 30 Rock?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about, like, post-2000.
Post-2000?
Yeah.
Why is that your, like...
No, a new millennium.
A new generation. Willium?
Yes, and a new Willium.
All right, fair enough. Well, we bid you adieu, 30 Rock.
I feel like we should mention, too, I mean, we're talking about this is a big send-off, and actually, I would say the reason that I watched 30 Rock in the first place was, I liked Tina Fey okay, I liked Alec Baldwin okay, but I actually think I started watching because I was a big Tracy Morgan fan.
Really?
Yeah. I know
I've never heard you mention
really
him ever.
I was more
until
obsessed.
We had the baby, and then you kept saying how much our baby acted like Tracy.
Right, pull his shirt up. I'm a Jedi. I was a big fan of Tracy Morgan on SNL because I felt like he was a big, like, piece of the anti-comedy movement
the Kevin Nealon.
Yeah. I think he was like a descendant of that because. And he kind of, I feel like he kind of carried that torch onto 30 Rock of being the, you know, how aware is he of what he's doing in the mold of comedy. And the first episode, my favorite line, for whatever reason, is they put AIDS in your chicken nuggets when he's sitting there at the diner with Liz Lemon, and Liz Lemon's trying to convince him to come work on the show. And he's trying to prove how crazy he is.
Yeah.
But then it turns out all to be an act. And I think Tracy Morgan has gotten kind of short shrifted over the years, and he went through some controversy a couple years ago, deservedly, for his antics. But him, Grizz, and .com, I think, are probably my second favorite. Like, I love subplots about Jack and Liz, but if I get a good Tracy, Grizz, and .com scene, that can often blow it many other things out of the water.
I agree with the .com and Grizz, but I think my favorite characters, one, 30 Rock taught me that Alec Baldwin was funny.
Yes.
Like, and he's hosted SNL like a million times.
Right. You know,
but he's never been funny before to me ever.
Right.
Until 30 Rock.
And he's always been serviceable on SNL, I think, but I think really that role of Jack Donaghy just suited him so perfectly that he inhabited it more than any other character he had before.
Yeah. I also would like to shout out to the character of Jonathan, who I feel like didn't feel get like, enough love for the seasons. And Dennis.
Dennis, yeah, I was really hoping Dennis would come back in the last couple episodes.
He's busy.
He came back earlier in the 7th season.
Yes, he did, and it was wonderful.
It was
him and
it.
His wife. He came back a couple times, I think, in the season. It was great.
I think he also has one of my top like 5 lines of the show, where it's just a jump cut to him singing in his band. Just saying, I just want to rock.
Yeah.
So funny.
Oh, so amazing through your act.
Not so great characters that end up doing, that 30 Rock end up doing well by the end, include both Kenneth, who they made the new president of programming or whatever. I thought that was, they actually found like a worthwhile arc for him that wasn't just like a C plot for several episodes, and then also Lutz. I think my favorite, actually, storyline, and a lot of people I've seen online agree with me, the favorite storyline of the finale is actually Lutz. Like, how do you do that? This is your last episode ever, and you're devoting it to this guy forcing people to get blimpies for lunch. It's like, and they've always done this, like, hilarious way of a product placement, but reversed as something horrible, and yet, I mean, blimpies, like many others, like, free promotion is free promotion, right?
Right. For the record, our son's middle name is spelled L-U-T-Z, but it's pronounced Lutz.
Lutz.
We did not name our son after Lutz.
Though I do love Lutz as well. We should move on.
Yeah, but just one more thing on 30 Rock, and then we're going to move on. It's just, the only casualty of 30 Rock in its 7-year run was, the initial, like, Jimmy Fallon character.
Oh, yeah. What was his name? Josh?
Maybe, probably. Yeah. Something forgettable.
But he showed up in the finale, didn't he? Like, in the
background. In the finale, did he?
Or, like, in the last few episodes. Like, they were, like, about to give him a line, and then he got cut off. Like, it was a meta joke about his character in the first
place. Oh, really? I missed
that. Yeah, I mean, that was in, like,
I remember I saw him in one episode where he's like, I've been here the whole time.
That's so weird that happened. But I'm happy that they acknowledged their blunders.
And he'll go down in history as part of a small group of written-off characters in sitcom history.
For sure.
Like Judy in Family Matters.
The sister from Boy Meets World.
Yeah, the original sister, yeah.
Morgan.
So, 30 Rock.
Yeah.
I do.
I can't wait to revisit it. Next on our list, I kind of hinted at it, but this idea of if you have male and female protagonists in the same room, eventually they're going to hook up. And that finally happened on actually the show that I would probably say is my second favorite on this list.
Really?
Yeah. I feel uncomfortable saying that, but I really think it's true. Fox's New Girl. It finally happened.
Don't you just like New Girl because you think I am the character of Nick? And then you just like stare at me when he says angry things and laugh.
That's so true. You're so Nick. It's awesome.
Harumph.
I don't know how they did it, and I don't think it necessarily might say it's not as good as 30 Rock. Well, yeah, I'm saying it's not as good as 30 Rock because they went to that well, but at the same time they're acting in very much more traditional restrictions than 30 Rock ever did. But, it's, you know, it's a hangout show, Friends-style show, whatever. Nothing very outwardly amazing about it, but just something about the way these characters have clicked with each other ever since the end of season one has just gotten me more and more excited to watch the show every week in season two. And it was mostly just for the jokes, like, just for seeing, like, Nick's angry face, or seeing Winston's confused face, or seeing Schmidt's overconfident face. And actually, I think Zooey Deschanel's also gotten funny.
Because she's gotten less adorkable.
Right. And it's more just, they're not afraid to make fun of her. I think similar to Alicia Cuthbert's character on Happy Endings, where it's not about that person being, you know, the straight person amongst the crazies, but they have their own crazy qualities too, and that doesn't necessarily take away from the fact that they're empathetic. And I think it was smart to get her out of the elementary teaching profession that makes her less twee. I think it was smart to let her actually be messy in relationships rather than just, you know, adorably making a mistake on a date. They've given her long-term relationships with, like, David Walton's character, and they did Dermot Mulroney's character from the end of season one.
Yeah.
And it actually makes her a more flawed character rather than just like, oh, I just bumble through life. Like, she's less Homer Simpson now, and she's more like
Homer Simpson. Really, you think that's how they set her up as?
Yeah, but like the girl version,
like a sexy Homer
Simpson. Exactly. I think that's why it didn't work a lot for the first half of the season one, is because I think that's what they were going for. I think they were going for a sexy Homer Simpson, which does not work. And but okay, so coming back to this whole thing, so Jess and Nick, eventually you're going to have them in the same room together where they're vulnerable and they kiss, right? And they finally did that, and I was unsure of where it was going to go, and we still have some more episodes to watch with season two to see if they actually play it out this way, but it seems like they're playing it out as if that happened, and they're at least for a while going to keep going their separate ways, and keep, even though she's now broken up with Sam, David Walton's character. So I was interested to hear your perspective, if that's something you buy, or you're just not invested in the relationship part at all, the character part at all, or you just watch the jokes.
Well, I guess my concern is, like that arc on any other show, is where do they go from there? Right?
Right.
They either have to go down the road of, like, the Ross and Rachel, like, together, not together, together, not together, over a period of seasons. Or... I mean, I guess I don't know where else they go with it. They're not going to stay together.
But do you think it's possible that they literally never get back together?
No.
You think they have to?
I think, hey, once they go down that road, especially Fox goes down that road, I don't know.
I don't know. I guess the only thing that makes me think they wouldn't is because I feel like the way they've set up these characters is that there's a lot more options for them. And I think, like, Jess's relationship with Sam compared to, like, Nick's relationship with Olivia... What's her name?
Wilde?
No, different Olivia. Not the one...
Is it?
No. It's the other one. The one from the newsroom.
Oh, Munn?
Yeah, Olivia Munn's character. I think that that it's possible to have these characters keep having... serial monogamy relationships and still have that tension between them, and now that they've actually kissed, now it's over with and they can move
no,
on.
No, I think they're gonna revisit it.
Okay, maybe I'm just being too optimistic.
Yeah, that's we'll fair. See.
Okay, regardless of whether or not you think it's possible for them to do something different than what's been done on 1,000 sitcoms before, do you agree that it's become better in season 2?
I do. Yeah, there was no way, if they had kept up the trajectory of season one, that I'd still be watching it.
Yeah, and there was a period of time, at least, actually when it was getting better at the end of season one, where I remember I was spacing out just because I felt like I didn't want to give up on the show, but I also was just not invested in it at all, and I only laughed a couple times per episode. But I actually think one of the reasons why, just on sheer humor value, one of the reasons why I look forward to the show every week is just because... the joke quotient has become so much more consistent than a lot of other shows. And maybe that's also part of, like, the novelty factor. Like, it's something, even though it's in its second season, it feels like something fresher because it's improved so greatly. that I don't know, I find myself more excited to watch it than many other shows. And I don't know, I think the biggest problem that's still happening is that Winston is the guy who plays Winston is hilarious and is often given some of the funniest lines of the night, but he's always relegated to like the side plot. He's never put front and center like either Nick or Schmidt is, you know? Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a problem that they dug themselves and is too far to dig themselves out of. And but it seems unfortunate because it seems like he should have...
It's time for his due.
Right, he should have equal opportunity. Just like, I think maybe... And maybe that was like, if you compare it to Friends, because there are a lot of similarities to it, eventually some people thought that Joey could be taken as seriously as the others, but I think the problem they always had was that Joey is the dumb one, right? That they tried to like make him just as identifiable as Chandler and Ross, but I don't think that Winston has any quality that like would make him on a lower tier than Schmidt.
He's
anything,
not any more of a caricature than anybody else.
Right.
He's not more cartoonish.
Right. I actually think he's probably the least cartoonish of the three of them. Especially now that Nick has gotten more
so
crazy.
Maybe Winston's the straight man.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, that's probably true. I mean, it's like one of the funniest episodes so far this season was when he convinces Schmidt that he's really into crack cocaine. And plays the straight guy to see how far Schmidt will go. Because Schmidt is actually more like a Joey than any of the other characters, and yet he's... Max Greenfield, because he's really funny, has always been like kind of put in spotlight as second to Jess, if not third, because now Nick is in the fray with his relationship.
It's really odd you're going down this like road of like tiering the characters. Like,
well, I feel like that always happens in my mind when I watch like an ensemble.
That's why I
like
think
that.
The show has gotten so much better though. Like, if I can pinpoint why we're still watching in the second season, yes, you can point to the joke quotient, but the reason that that's higher is because this show's become more and more of an ensemble piece.
Yeah, that's
true. I think that's what's made it funny.
That's true. And yeah, because then one of the big reasons why season one wasn't as funny is because it was so focused just on Jess's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And her being the sexy Homer Simpson, so to speak.
All right, let's move on.
Okay. Another show that we should probably talk about, even though it'll make me sad too, is... the show that has finally come back after a lengthy hiatus,
yes,
to NBC on Thursday nights after being threatened with a Friday night slot, after getting retooled by studio execs with a new showrunner. Yeah, you've probably guessed it by now. We're talking about Community.
R.I.P.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I don't even know how to talk about this without just crumbling.
I know. It'll be all right.
Will it? Well, I will say
this. Is that your crying voice?
Is that how I cry?
Yeah, it's kind of like ugly crier.
Jimmy Stewart on.
It is a little bit.
Quaaludes.
I'm gonna make you Google Quaaludes later.
I just picked a word.
Yeah.
I will say this: there's been two episodes that have aired, and the third one has not gotten great buzz. I think the second one was better than the first one. Not by much.
I don't think so. I think
you don't think so.
And the thing is, it's not like it was a total like drop off the cliff. It's not like you saw the first season after or the first episode after its return, and you were like, oh god, this is jump the shark.
Well, that's
this is off.
That's what.
It just,
yeah.
It's just lost. It's lost its sheen.
It's spark. Yeah. It's weird though because it still has half the writers that. Or from the last season.
Yeah, and it has half the jokes. So
totally half, it's just half as good. And that's a big percentage drop when talking about a show that was as wondrous as Community was, especially in its third season, with one of the, and we've said it before, but probably one of the best half hours of television of all time, Remedial Chaos Theory.
Yes.
I know. And maybe that's just like, and that's the thing, is like you asked me, like, are you going to continue watching it? And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. Because I still think, it's hard to compare it because you can't really divorce your love for a show.
If this was my first time watching it, was this season coming back?
Exactly, but it's not. So you can't think that way, because like objectively.
Oh, that's not true though. I can absolutely think that way because we just talked about a show like 30 Rock that got over its rough period. Even in the depths of 30 Rock's rough patch, if that had been the first time I ever saw that show, I would have laughed and said, "This is a funny show. I want to see this again."
Do you think so? I don't think you can say that. I really don't think you can say that.
I just did, so clearly I can.
I'm saying you can't say that with authenticity.
Can't I?
Anyways, let's talk about these new episodes, because these two new showrunners are actually previously from Happy Endings, and they have big shoes to fill, but I think they still are capable of delivering a serviceable sitcom. The main criticism of these new episodes have been that...
God, you're just like a little kid whose dad left to get cigarettes and never came back, and you just wait by the door every day. Like, maybe today will be different. I think it's possible. It's my birthday today. Maybe he'll send a card. He's not going to send a card, Chris.
Shut up.
And he's not coming back to cigarettes.
I'm not.
And the show is not getting better.
No. Why do you crush every dream I have? You just take it and you wring its neck.
Pop!
Like it's
your bubble being burst.
No wonder there's all this talk of impotence.
What? Sounds like a personal problem. Let's move on. No, what do you want to say about these last two episodes?
I want to say
the death knell of Community.
This drop down for Community. Drop down quality. I don't think it's a death knell, because there are glimmers, especially in the second episode, of something that is not necessarily real, but is something that I can nevertheless hold on to. In that, yes, the main criticism has been that Gurascu, or however you pronounce his name, and Port, these two guys that took over, have just been trying to emulate Dan Harmon's style, the previous showrunner. But at the same time, maybe that's what needs to happen in order for them to find their own voice. And then the transition is, yes, just as rocky, but... Just as rocky as if they had just miraculously found their own voice right away. And then there'd be a complete chasm between what the Community was before and what the Community is now. Because, like, as you said, it's not like it went from great to horrible. It just went from great to okay.
Right.
And so maybe that needs to go from great to okay, stumble a little bit, and then maybe by the end of the fourth season, it can have an honorable conclusion, if not a renewal for an even more improved fifth season. Which actually, while that sounds ridiculous for this show that's gone through so many changes and has so few Nielsen viewers to be renewed for a fifth season, especially when its conceit is students being in college, traditionally a 4-year proposition.
Two. They're at a community college.
Community colleges... No community colleges offer 4-year degrees.
Not in Minnesota, except in partnership with
a... Does the show take place in Minnesota? No, it takes place in California.
So you're really familiar with the intricacies of the California...
No, system. I'm asking, are you?
Yeah, I am, actually, with both of... They have two state systems of universities there.
Explain.
They partner with community colleges, but they are all two-year programs that parlay into admission at either California State or the UCC system.
Okay. So it's impossible to get a 4-year...
Why are we having this argument?
...bachelor degree at a community college in California.
You might be able to do, like, get a degree through one of the universities while attending class at a college site.
Okay. Now let me ask you this. Have you ever seen a community college do a school-wide paintball competition or build a KFC-sponsored spaceship simulator?
No, but that's why I'm saying they can say that school lasts 6 years, 8 years, 10 years, doesn't matter. But don't rely on the 4-year proposition, because that doesn't make any sense.
regard. It does make sense in the universe of the show that makes its own rules. So I'm saying, anyway, how did we get here? And why do we do this to each other? Anyways, what I'm trying to say...
I should just let you have this.
No.
Let you sleep with this sweet, sweet dream of community getting better.
God.
And I'll be here...
That's all I want.
I'll be here to catch you when you ultimately fall.
That's all I want.
Yep. I'll be here to wipe your tears.
I thought...
/ mock you.
I thought the two moments in the second episode that felt real, not on a joke level, because I still didn't laugh very much, though I did laugh more, I think, than I did in the first episode of season 4. The two moments that felt good to me were when...
You took those Quaaludes.
You don't know what Quaaludes are either.
Yeah, I do.
Explain, what is a Quaalude?
Let's just move on.
No! If we're going to do tangents, we're going to do them.
A Quaalude is a tranquilizer.
Therefore
what? You just asked me what it was.
Therefore?
Oh my god, keep going.
I liked...
Let's just move on.
I liked Giancarlo Esposito coming back and what Gilbert said to Pierce as we find out that he's the Scooby-Doo boogeyman behind the haunting of Hawthorne Manor. That felt like an emotional moment tied into a series of jokes that landed well. Unlike the first episode that tried to do the meta commentary on Jeff's rah-rah, here we go together speech at the end of the episode, which they've done twice before, and they attempted to just redo a third time for whatever reason for the premiere, and just did not feel real. But this new exploration of Pierce's character... and Gilbert, who was introduced last season, felt like something new and something real. And the other thing is, they've been going down this well for a long time of Jeff's daddy issues, and I think that's one of the best things the show's done with Jeff's character, because he's never been the strongest or most interesting of the group. But when we see him look at his boxing glove from his boxer Halloween costume, and you see that it's Stitch with his dad's name, and that tied into what I thought was actually pretty amusing back and forth between Britta dressed as a ham, trying to shoehorn her way into being Jeff's therapist, was nice, and both, like I said, tied into a series of jokes and felt honest and true to the character and possibly taking it somewhere new.
And what's with Britta dating Troy?
That is weird. That is something that I'm not sold on. And even when Dan Harmon was running the show, was suspicious about. This goes back to the whole idea of, you know, having a guy and a girl in the same room. They've got to eventually hook up. And that's maybe was one of Community's weaknesses, along with when they did a lot of fan reaction to people saying that Jeff should be with Annie instead of Britta. I don't know. I've honestly never really watched this show. I love all the characters, and I love that they all get explored with their relationships and neuroses, but I've never really bought any of the hooking up as anything more than a mirror to what's actually going on personally with the characters. And it'll be interesting to see if they explore that with Troy and Britta as the season goes on. That said, as I've been hinting and implying, because I love these characters so much, I'll go forth into the darkness with these two new showrunners, even if it means my heart breaking slowly along the way.
And I will hold your hand and sleep.
Thank you. That's all I ask. Going on. We mentioned it a couple times, talking about ensemble shows and talking about shows that have done well by changing their characters' motivations. Happy Endings, I think, has gotten... stayed as good as it was.
Yeah. Continuing on a high.
I think there was a couple weak episodes this season compared to, I think, was probably, if I had to nitpick and say one was better than the other, I'd say season 2 probably still reigns supreme. And I forget which, I'd have to look back at the synopses, but there's a couple episodes this season that didn't feel too either cohesive or where the joke, because it's a show that is so rapid fire with its jokes that so many of them fell flat. But I think the most recent episodes, which they're burning off two at a time now on ABC, as they move it to Friday nights, and which may mean impending cancellation, have been good. The what was the one we just watched? The pranks, Max's pranks.
Oh yeah, the whole Usual Suspects.
Yes. Yeah. The Kaiser Soze homage at the end. That was, I think, one of the better episodes of the year. I think this is a show, unlike most other sitcoms, that excels at physical comedy, which I know you're a huge fan of.
Love the slapstick so much.
And I think that it's kind of found its voice in that, because the characters are even more over the top. Like, I think, like, any character, you take, like, Schmidt on New Girl, and he's over the top, but I think any character in Happy Ending still outdoes even him. And I think if there was, like, a kindred successor to 30 Rock's ridiculousness, I guess I'd most see it in Happy Endings now.
I like that Happy Endings proves that you don't have to, you can have an ensemble show without having, like, the straight man. Like, there's no, like, they're all cartoons, like, right. And they're all hilarious.
And that was one of its missteps in season one, is they tried to make Dave that, and then they tried to make Alex that, and now they're just like, fuck it. Everybody's crazy.
And it works.
Right.
And
it's still as believable, and, once again, talking about, like, tropes and sitcom, you know, longevity is, eventually you've got to have one of the single ones get married, and the most recent episode ended with Penny getting engaged to Pete, who's played by this weird, like, marble-mouthed straight man kind of character, and that it remains to be seen what happens between them, if the marriage goes through or not. But
I'm gonna guess no.
Yeah, based on the fact that there's really nothing exciting or memorable about
Pete. But it's gonna be good.
Yeah, I hope so.
I like that there's a little bit of, like, I can't even believe I'm saying this, because I'm not a big Seinfeld fan. But I like that there's a little bit of Seinfeld in that show, and that, like, they're all kind of mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Too.
That's, I mean,
like, they're
yeah.
cartoons, but they're also, like, you wouldn't really want to be friends with any of these people.
Right. And there was a really good episode, or I don't even know if the episode was scene. That good, but the scene where they go meet Pete's friends.
Right.
Yes.
Right, and you see, like, how obviously terrible they would be to hang out with.
Right.
In normal it's social
similar
situations.
To It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, but not quite that mean.
No, like, no. Mean, still mean in a... Because it's always funny, it was all kind of got surreal, especially in its later really seasons.
A little much.
But still the same kind of idea that these are not people you'd want to hang out with, but you definitely want to watch.
Right.
But at the same time, with Happy Endings, even more so than Seinfeld, and definitely more so than It's Always Sunny, like, I feel like their characters, even though they're totally crazy and over the top, they're still more relatable.
Yeah.
Because they're still, like, average everyday, you know, 30-somethings that live in a normal city and have seemingly normal jobs.
Well, or don't have jobs and still live in, like, beautiful lofts, but we'll just...
Yeah. you can move past that. Good on Happy Endings. Let's hope that it doesn't get canceled in its Friday death slot, though it probably will. But three seasons, though, is things still pretty good for a show that kind of both had a rocky beginning and didn't have anything that, like, really made viewers latch onto it, other than the fact that its cast was funny and its writing was funny.
And Perfect Couples got canceled at the same time it premiered.
Right. And it's the same kind of Friends hangout show with various couples. All right. Let's wrap this up with a couple minor... No. Let's talk about Parks and Rec quick. It's continuing through to the, speaking of marriage tropes, eventually Ben and Leslie getting married. I think it's done well, just as well as previous seasons, but the thing that they've done recently, it seems, is, like, each episode, while strong overall, has its, like, breakout highlight scene. You okay, Jessica?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. You're showing me your eyelids inside out, and I was concerned. Are we done?
Let's keep going.
Okay. Parks and Rec's funny, right? No. Okay, let's wrap it up. Parks and Rec's funny. notably, the most hilarious scene thus far in 2013 is definitely Ben Wyatt, or Ron Swanson, trying to hit the phone onto the floor
when while they all battling have food poisoning.
And then Ben Wyatt dialing 911 with his nose. So good. So good. Yeah, keep doing what you're doing, Parks and Rec. Keep going with the mouse rat appearances, and I hope Ben and Leslie's wedding is both sweet and not conventional. And I think we can trust Parks and Rec to not do that.
Unconventional?
Yeah. I want it to be unconventional.
Right.
Right. But the thing that I was worried about is the last episode ended with Ben saying, why don't we just get married tonight? And then I just had, like, the April and Andy wedding deja vu, which was an awesome episode, but I don't want them to do it again. And I doubt that they will in a way that is predictable, but I feel like that was kind of a sour note to end on if they really wanted us to be, like, gasping at the end of it.
Why don't you borrow some of your positivity that surrounds community okay. and apply it to Parks and Rec? It'll be fine.
I know, it'll be fine. Real quick, last couple shows that are on our radar in 2013 are The Mindy Project and Raising Hope. And while I love Raising Hope, I feel like and maybe it's more still a novelty thing, but I'm actually liking more and more looking forward to watching and catching up with The Mindy Project.
Me too.
It's really found its voice despite its horrible theme song and credits. And still, are you done? You're the one that wants to go to bed. I still feel like that show's kind of nebulous in the work versus friends hangout mode area. Like, it's not sure if it wants to be workplace comedy or a friends hangout social life comedy, and
I think
it's trying to play both
to
ways.
Well.
I know, but I don't know. Maybe that's just part of what I'm used to is a show having a main focus, and maybe it's okay that they're doing that.
No, but it's social. But they're all her work colleagues,
right?
Like, she doesn't really have friends outside of that, except like
Blondie McBlondie. Yeah.
Yeah, Blondie McBlondie.
What's her name? Gwen. Yeah. I think they have enough confidence and good jokes to keep finding that voice. And Raising Hope had a Back to the Future episode with Christopher Lloyd, and that was genius.
Yes, it was good. And they had the DeLorean door that opened on their house.
Yes, that was... I want that. They have a director's cut of Cujo on VHS, and Bert alphabetizes his VHS tapes by ferocity of serial killer, which is amazing. The end.
The end.
The end. Watch
Thanks
those
for
shows. They're available on Netflix if you need to catch up on previous seasons, along with House of Cards, like we mentioned, with its full first season available on demand, but not on demand like the cable copyright thing. On demand as you can go on Netflix anytime and watch it. Thanks for listening. You can go to bit.ly/blogflix to get your free 2-week trial of Netflix, courtesy of Blogulator Radio and Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. You can find us online at theblogulator.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and we just want to remind you one last time.
Our
opinions are valid.
Turn the birds word lurid, the whir and the purr of a twirler girl. She would the world were demure. The ensures a law for valor, wap your carriwara. One fervid whirl over her turgid error. Rural Jura, rural Jura. I will never forget you, rural Jura. I'll always you, rural you.